Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Hello, Chris Evans here to thank you for listening to my podcast. Featuring this week, astronaut Tim Peake, Motley Crue's Nikki Sixx, the hilarious Marcus Brigstocke, the history guy Dan Snow, author of the world's fittest book Ross Edgley, the amazing Wim Hof, from the brand new film Fighting With My Family, Nick Frost and Jack Loudon, Rachel's hubby Alex Horn, Peaky Blinders writer and director Stephen Knight, Ollie Murs, Helen George from Call the Midwife, Kay Burney from Sky News, and explorer extraordinaire Ben Fogle. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, listen up, everybody. Listen being the most important word there. You'll find out why in a sec. One man is making it his mission to remind you about the power of using your ears. Two ears, one mouth. What gave us the first clue? Live from the European Space Agency in Germany, it is the awesome astronaut and super scout ambassador, Tim Peake. Good morning, Major Tim.
Good morning, Chris. How are you this morning?
I'm very well. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, doing great, thank you.
So what's going on presently at the European Space Agency that you might want to tell us about?
It's busy times. We've just got Alex Gerst back from the space station. He's our German astronaut. And Luca Parmitano, our Italian astronaut, launches in a couple of months' time. So we're in between missions at the moment. But we're also launching a new spacecraft from the US on Saturday, which is the first Dragon, the Crew commercial spacecraft. So everybody's waiting with bated breath to see that launch go ahead as well.
Are you like Arthur's Knights of the Round Table? How many astronauts, past, present and future, sit around a table? What's the most you've had around one table at one time?
On the space station, I think they had 14 was the most.
Whoa.
When the space shuttle docked to the space station. So that was a big party on board.
Okay. And when they come home, when you have a homecoming, what is the official homecoming? And you know, how do you have a sort of more relaxed homecoming when somebody returns from space?
Yeah, we meet them. We actually fly them straight back from the steppes of Kazakhstan. They get on an aircraft and fly directly to Cologne. And so we have a big welcome home party for them. But then, of course, they have to go into a period of 21 days of intensive rehabilitation and science experiments.
Okay, all right. That's decompression. That's everything you need to bring you back down to Earth.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, now tell us about why we should listen more as a scout ambassador.
Yes. I'm really proud to be a scout ambassador, and we're helping to encourage and develop listening skills. You know, it's really an art form that we're losing, is how to listen properly, not just hearing, but actually understanding what people are saying, responding and remembering and retaining that information. Something that the scouts do a brilliant job of helping to develop. And of course, listening skills can really better our society, a more cohesive society, and in the workplace at home as well.
Now, we talk about this a lot on the show, and we talked about, you know, self-regulating your body temperature earlier on this week, which we're doing less and less of because we now exist more in air-conditioned environments and we wear more clothing and we just over-accessorize and over-comfort our lives. And what we're doing is we're sort of dealing our natural senses out of you know, our day-to-day existence. And this is another example of that, and we really sort of have to get on it, don't we?
We do, yes, and we live in a changing society, a modern society. Everybody, you know, has a smartphone, and in many respects, the art of conversation has been replaced by texting and messaging, which has its place. It can be convenient, but if you've got something important to say, you need to say it face to face. And if you want to be understood clearly, again, you have to have that conversation, and you have to ensure that people are listening to you. You know, there are times when you can encourage this with young people, be it if your parents around the dinner table, you know, get the electronic devices away, actually sit down, have a conversation, talk about what went on during the day, and listen and check that people have understood what you said clearly. But you're right, we actually have to work harder, I think, in today's society to actually retain those skills that we once had.
And our senses are for free, for heaven's sake.
Exactly.
It's mad, isn't it? It's crazy. Tim, it's also very important when you're interviewing people on the radio, so I've taken note of all you've said and I promise I'll listen the whole way through.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place on Virgin Radio.
Being a rock star is a dream had by many but lived by only a few. Our next guest is one of the few, and boy, did he live it. Motley Crue have been immortalized in the new film The Dirt, coming soon to Netflix. And here to tell us just how many of the crazy stories are true, it's the musical powerhouse, Nikki Sixx.
Good morning, Nikki.
I like that intro.
Yeah, well, he's pretty good at this. He's really, Dave is, I mean, yeah. I'm excited about meeting you, but you can't help yourself,
can
you?
I'm very excited. No, it's in your blood.
It's in your blood. Well, first of all, I just have to say anything that happened in the movie is all false. just so you know, okay?
But that's not the case, is it?
Oh, you know, I'll never tell.
Okay. How many times were you nearly not here? How many times did you come close?
Oh, my God. Back in, you know, it's been... Oh, over 30 years since I was a heroin addict. But during that time was unbelievable. I mean, the stories go on and on and on. And, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the 70s, and those were like my bands. You know, whether it was mostly the British bands, too, were the ones somehow connected with me. And a lot of that I was emulating, and the band was emulating when we first started out. So whether it was the Pistols or Black Sabbath, it was the same thing. It was like more is more. And we just kind of lived that life. But, you know, there are repercussions from that. And that's what you're talking about. That's the, I think, might be the cautionary tale in the movie.
When was it purely rock and roll? And then when did it begin to go off the rails? And then when did it go so far off the rails that, you know, it was you or it?
You know, the movie really does a great job of giving each individual band member's backstory. So you sort of understand. The thing that was always fun about being in Motley Crue was that we were all so different. One guy was into the blues, one guy was into punk, one guy was into more rhythm stuff. And, you know, we all met somewhere, like all agreeing, like on Cheap Trick and T-Rex and stuff like that. But we wanted to play heavier than that. So it was all great. And then but because of the lifestyle that we lived, it catches up with you. And I think it was really, you know, trying to think about when it really was at its worst was maybe like 86. So we came out in 81. So by 86, we were, you know, selling out. We'd been probably 4 years of selling out arenas and stadiums. And the thing about the 80s, because this movie is really era specific, is every time we did something wrong, we got like a cookie for it. It was like, hey, good job. You guys like rolled a car. Like, hey, your album sales went up. You guys just throw more televisions out of the window. And, you know, you sort of like, as a young kid, you're like, oh, this is great. This is like, I remember that. And then, you know, you would, you know, hear things. I remember, you know, about a lot of the guys that I was drawn to, more of the outlaw type artists, and that's where like drugs came into play for me. Like, you know, here when I was first introduced to heroin, I thought, well, Johnny Thunders does heroin, so he's super cool, so I'll give it a shot. You know, and that's literally, you know, how it starts.
So when you started taking, you know, hard drugs, like heroin, when you started to dabble with it first, then become addicted to it second, and whatever happened in between, you know, how long was it survivable for, you know, before it became an issue?
You know, I'm one of these personalities that, you know, I get obsessed with things. So and that's part of why I'm successful in a lot of different areas. So I threw myself head strong right into it right away, because that just was the people I was surrounded. It was like the more is the better. And it was through, you know, multiple overdoses and then finally like hitting bottom. And I'm really lucky, to be honest with you, that I was at my worst with heroin addiction for 1 year. And that's why I ended up writing the book, The Heroin Diaries. And that also not only shows a little bit of a backstory for me and my relationship with my parents and the one I didn't have with my parents, and sort of feeling abandoned, trying to fill that hole, but also talks a lot about recovery. And that's what we're working on right now, is a musical that'll be coming out next year. And it really shows the recovery side of it. And we're hoping that the projects, the Heroin Diaries musical, will do for the opiate epidemic what Rent did for AIDS. That's kind of our goal. We're working with the government, actually, and we're working on like keeping it national, internationally, and localized. So
okay, and so do you have a beer now? Do you have a glass of wine? Do you have nothing?
No, I have nothing. Yeah,
and you can't. As simple as that. Or you choose not to.
I don't think it would be a good idea. So, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, they got to dinner, right, and they're like, you know, I'll have a iced tea, and I'm like, well, why don't you guys drink what you usually drink? I'm not a Sobo cop here.
Honestly, SoboCop is good,
right? I'm not
where'd
here.
You get that from, SoboCop?
I think I just made it up
that
somewhere.
That is so cool. You need to register that domain.
I got to trademark that
immediately.
Let's trademark
it. Yeah, we do it on the air. Okay,
it could be our band.
It's Nikki's idea. SoboCop.com. Genius.
What kind of music do we play if our band's called SoboCop?
Who cares? We're just happy on life. Beach Boys one day, Led Zeppelin the next.
I love it. I love it.
Garfunkel in between.
I love it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
This master of satirical comedy has made us laugh and gasp over the last two decades. His new stand-up show, Devil May Care, sees him dressed as Lucifer himself. Let's say hello to the devilish Marcus Brigstocke.
Thank you very much, Steve. Morning,
Marcus. Hello.
So the tour, it's gone gangbusters, 50-odd dates, 25 performances at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and now a very brief residency to bow, say goodbye and move on to the Soho Theatre this week.
Starts tonight. Okay. Yeah. Can't wait.
So is this a celebration of what's gone before?
This show?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. It's a completely new thing for me. I'm painting my head and hands red and gluing horns to my forehead and doing the whole show as Lucifer. The starting point of the show was how split and divided things feel at the moment and how we've seemed to have reached this weird point where the people who disagree with us aren't just disagreeing with us, they're actually bad, they're evil, there's something wrong with them. And social media seems to have, like, blown this up. You know, I like that film. Do you? Well, you're wrong. You're completely wrong. Like, nothing's subjective anymore. And then there's the issue of people, like, giving themselves a really hard time over quite simple stuff. So Lucifer, who's now retired and playing golf and stuff like that, has risen from hell to say, hell is full, and we need to take back control of our borders because we're sick of people arriving in hell for having used a plastic straw after they broadcast Blue Planet 2.
You sort of dressed as the devil from the neck up.
Yeah. That's weird because people who come to the show have seen the poster of me in full Lucifer get-up, and then I walk out on stage and you can see people going, oh, he's really gone for it. Wow. And all my stand-up mates going, you have missed the point of stand-up, which is walk in, talk, and go again. It takes me like an hour to get ready and an hour to wash everything off.
What about this thing called grievance without a cause, where people wake up aggrieved, and then spend the first 5 minutes looking for the cause, and then they have the cause for that day, and then they go to bed and have to find another one the next day because they're just waking up.
What an exhausting way to live.
No, but it's true.
But do you ever do that? Do you ever go to the places where you know you're going to be irritated?
Baggage
reclaim at the airport, right? That's the thing for me. There's a line round the reclaim, and if everyone stays behind the line, that system works brilliantly. Mm. One step forward, bag off, and away you go. Mm. But the everyone treats the line like you have to get you, your trolley, and your whole family between the line in the front of the thing. And it's one of those things, it goes right under my nail, right? It makes me so angry. And I stand there knowing it's going to happen, waiting for it to happen, and being near the people who are making it happen the most, just choosing a grievance. I'm like, this is fine.
Well, the person that's making it happen the most is the person who puts their toe over the line, because that person gets slightly ahead of the person that's next to them. Then they have to go, that person genuinely can't see their bag, so has to go one shoulder in front of the other person.
Exactly.
And it's the same happens at the World Rallycross. Especially
Same thing.
The Welsh stages, but in this case, you get hit by a car.
Well, I was going to say, the consequences there are a bit more extreme, aren't they? Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever find any fans of World Rallycross edging towards the what's it called?
The track, the conveyor
carousel.
Belt. Yeah.
The carousel is what it's called, the carousel.
Yeah, but you get told off if you ride it.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, if you get on the baggage carousel.
No, one would presume you do, but have you ever witnessed that happening?
Yeah, I've taken my kids. Oh, hang on. It was me that told them off. Maybe I should have let it happen.
Did they get on it?
Yeah, of course they did. They're kids.
Well, whilst it was moving?
Yes.
Don't alarms go off?
It's an adventure.
No, I get it. I'm not sure it actually has ever happened. But your kids have done it.
My kids have done it. Yeah, of course.
And are they a fan of normal theme parks? Do they like other
rides? Yeah, they love a ride. Yeah. I mean, we've never had to take them. We just take a cheap international flight and on they go.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
From the number of shells fired on the first day of the Somme to Napoleon Bonaparte's actual height, there is no history question our next guest can't answer. dancer. He's currently on tour with the brilliant An Evening with the History Guy. Please welcome the handsome history hunk, Dan Snow.
Morning, Dan.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very good. Good to be back in the same studio with you.
What do you think?
I think it's the best view. I was looking out the window. I was trying to see if I could spot a historical building from every single century in the last 1,000 years. But I'm struggling with the 14th century, God darn it.
Really? The monument's right opposite
The
us.
Monument's right opposite. You can see the Tower of London to the right and you can see St Paul's to the left. I mean, it's got it all.
HMS Belfast, you've got that going on there. It's good. You've got some historic cranes.
You've got some 21st century cranes.
Yeah, so, An Evening with the History Guy. You've done 15. You're going to do lots more. You've had a bit of a half turn with the kids. And now they're not going to see for about a year. What are people that are coming to the theatres going to see?
What they're going to see is me kind of waxing lyrical about history, why it's the most important and wonderful subject you can ever study, because history is the reason that we're all here today. If you look out this city, look at London, you can see there's Billingsgate's Fish Market. This is a city built around the Thames. The Romans put a bridge across here because it was the widest part of the Thames they could still bridge. So it's closest part to the sea they could still bridge, and London's the result. So we're all sitting here, we're all speaking English, we're all in this place because of our past. And I think I'm trying to sort of encourage people to connect with that, especially in an era of Trump and Brexit and Russia kicking off and trade wars with China. We all need to know about what's been going on.
If you could go back to one century, which century would you go back to?
Well, I'm looking out the window at that neoclassical building down there, and that's inspiring. So 18th century, it's a century where the male fashion was awesome. I mean, look at us blokes here. We just look rubbish, don't we? I mean,
yeah, we do.
Can you, I mean, you actually look fantastic, I've got to say, because you're channeling your 18th century vibe there. You're going colours. But this is just rubbish. I'm wearing brown, grey trousers.
You've got a pink shirt on, Dan.
This is
great.
My pathetic attempt. So the fashion, you know, the fashion, and also it's the period when we go from this kind of, we start getting some superstitious society where nothing makes sense, to trying to make the world work the world out. And you got that in the end of the 17th century, 18th century, modern ideas around the economy, around social justice, around politics, around science, the stars. We're kind of trying to crack it, and it's such an exciting century.
So 1700s.
Late 16th. So looking out here, St Paul's Cathedral being finished, Isaac Newton starting doing his bit, yeah. People starting to work out that if you perform the same experiment twice, you get the same result. Oh, maybe there are rules that govern the universe. Exciting times.
What's the Brexit conversation like around your...
Well,
family breakfast table at the moment?
It's quite leery, really. And actually, I should say that we were talking about women earlier. And most of the most impressive people in my family are women, like my auntie Margaret McMillan, who was on Desert Island Dis yesterday. Legend. So there's a lot of Brexit chat. And John loves a crisis. He doesn't really mind. Like, he just loves, because the more that goes wrong, the better, because it's for newsmen. That's what they live
for. Bring on
right?
the bonfire.
Bring on the, yeah. And so actually, no deal Brexit, the whole way. Like, it was, my dad's retired now, so his opinions are starting to come out, which he always kept hidden for all those years when he's on Newsnight or whatever. And now he's a bit worried. Like, he's sad to see that he's always believed, as someone who's a bit older, he remembers the war, and he remembers thinking, oh, that's probably quite a good idea if we all work together. And I think there's going to be compromise, there's going to be messiness, but on the whole, I'm glad we're in the same room. So he's getting a bit sad as about it, actually.
And what can we learn from history right now to do with that?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think one of the things we learn from history is don't assume everything's going to be okay. They all thought that in 1914. They all thought, oh, it'll be all right. You know, some Franz Ferdinand's been shot. What's the worst going to happen? And the answer was the worst happened was one of the most appalling wars in history. So, but the other thing, I mean, that also we can take credit. The trouble is, historians, I'll give you both sides, because you can also say, well, actually, the world is more advanced. We are, democracy's more locked in. You know, we are a different society than 100 years ago. But my view, and looking back at history, just simply is where you've got a choice to work together, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be really annoying. It's going to represent a pain. You're going to have to compromise all sorts of idiots you don't like. It's frustrating. You're not going to get your own way all the time. But on the whole, it's by working together, you can advance, and you can get the ball down the park a little bit.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place on Virgin Radio.
All right, so joining us now, Eddie Temple-Morris, our co-worker, one of our co-hosts, our colleagues, a good friend of ours. Good morning, Eduardo.
Good morning, Christoph.
Okay, Eddie on 10 till 1, Monday through Friday, just after we finish. Now, Eddie, why are you on our show now? Why have you come on to say hello now?
You want me to talk about one of my heroes, him, Wim Hof, who I've literally just met. This is the Iceman. You were talking about altitude and stuff like that. That you're looking at a man that climbed Everest in a pair of shorts with no oxygen and no puffer jacket or anything like that.
And made it to the top?
Not to the top. I think he'll tell you, but he got above the kill line, which I think is 27,000 feet. He got to 28,000 feet and he turned his ankle and had to come down. And he's doing this all with thousands of hundreds-of-year-old breathing technique. It's nothing new. It's a yogic breathing technique. It's a controlled hyperventilation. You're basically overloading on oxygen to a DNA level. It's incredibly good for you.
Now, you're sort of his warm-up act, if you like.
Yeah, yeah,
a,
I'm
because
his hype
we love
man.
You, B, because we love you, C, because we love you, but D, because you do this on a regular basis.
Here's the thing. I'm living proof. I've done the Wim Hof method, as it's called. It's free. You can do it for free. I did it. I paid maybe $1.99 for an app back in the day, but it's free now. I just got everything from YouTube and I've done it every day for 2 years and 1 month, except for one day, right? When I went to Berlin to work and I just, what's the worst that can happen? I got a cold that day. I got a flu the one day that I didn't do it. And I've been absolutely cold free, flu free. For the rest of the time.
Wim Hof is with us live in the studio of Assos. It's all over to you for everything now.
Well, Wim, first of all, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Wow.
Are you aware how cool you are?
Hey, man. It's breaking the ice. cool, yes, I'm cool. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, not just because you're the Iceman, but also, I mean, look at you. You've got a Kilimanjaro t-shirt on. You've got khaki shorts on. You've got your sandals in the middle of February, even though it is quite sunny. And I love your hat. Tell us about your hat.
Yeah. Somebody knitted that hat. I really respectful wear it.
How did you become somebody who could set world records for your ability to withstand extreme cold? Where did that start?
You know, there's more than meets the eye. But you don't know what it is. I went into esoteric disciplines and all kinds of things, yoga and kung fu and karate, but nothing beats the cold. The cold is merciless but righteous, brings you right back into the depth.
How often do you ice bath?
Every day if it's possible. If I'm traveling, I'm sorry, it's not possible.
Did you hear Eddie just now when you were sitting outside, how he starts every day with the Wim Hof method? He paid $1.99 for your app. I think he wants a refund because it's free now.
Free now!
And the best thing
the
is,
wrong
when
time,
you,
eh?
Is when you go, when I went with snowboarding and I ended up, you know, just people just thought I was nuts. I just went outside and just fell backwards into a snowdrift after I'd done, you know, the breathing. And it doesn't hurt. It takes away your pain receptors down, correct me if I'm wrong, down to about 20%, which is why when you're having a baby, what do they say? Breathe, breathe, you know, because it things hurt less.
Right, Wim, come on. These guys do it because of you. You did it because of who? Who was your guru, your mentor?
I just see the one word there behind you, sky. It says sky, you know, something. There is more than meets the eye, you know, and it's there. And our ability we lost, I just got it back. It's a connection in the depth of our brain. I just proved it in scientific studies.
Ross, how did you meet?
Yeah,
Wim?
I think that's a really good point that Wim just said there. One thing that I learned from Wim is that I believe we're kind of atrophying these ancient age-old mechanisms, you know, within us. So I think this ability to thermoregulate, to control our body temperature, but right now we can control our artificial environments, we can turn the heating on if we're a little bit cold. So for the Great British Swim, I needed something to help me get around the top of Scotland, you know, when it was like 6 degrees. And so I ended up, you know, reaching out to women saying, look, you know, I'm planning this. I want to swim around Great Britain. I'm worried about the cold. And it was Wim who kind of taught me, one, about cold resilience and everything, also about immune health, but also performance and almost mental resilience. And I think everybody listening, we're far more powerful than often our own minds allow us to believe. And certainly, you know, with Wim, you know, constantly says, you know, Mother Nature is what do you say, Wim? With Mother Nature is basically so merciless but righteous.
Yes.
At the same time.
It is.
And
it is.
That was certainly the case I found.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? I think this mental resilience thing and atrophying the brain stem, which is related to the resilience to cold, heat, and stress in general. Stress is the biggest killer within the West. And it is cell biological stress, which creates inflammation. Inflammation creates depression, autoimmune diseases and all. We found the solution. And I'm proving this in scientific research, comparative studies, that we are able to enter into the deepest part of the brain and get there connected with our will again. And once that is, they said, we have the compelling evidence, psychiatrists, professors, after looking in my brain. Besides of that, the most exciting thing they found was brain activity.
Will you stay in touch? Will you stay in touch with us, please?
Yes, sir. Okay, Thank you.
That microphone is yours whenever you want it.
Can I say one more thing? Anyone listening that has Crohn's disease, the Wim Hof method, again, massive anecdotal evidence that people are managing it in a way that's blowing their minds.
My nephew has Crohn's disease.
Well,
it's a terrible disease, I tell you, and we are able to get the inflammation down, which is the cause and effect of Crohn's disease and arthritis. We can get it to 0%.
Excellent.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Entering the ring now are two acting heavyweights who star in Stephen Merchant's new film, Fighting With My Family. It's unleashed in cinemas nationwide tomorrow. But before it is, let's get psyched with Nick Frost and Jack Lowe-Loudon.
Good morning, hello. Gentlemen.
Hello, good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so Jack, premiere last night, young man. What was it like last night? Was it a big party or...?
Nah, I was in bed at 11.
11?
We've had a baby a few weeks ago, so any second we get, not Jack and I, but me and my partner get to say, well, you know, just go to sleep. We do that.
So let's talk about training for this, because you both had to do quite a lot. Okay, yeah. Jack on Zach, first of all.
So Zach is, at the time of shooting, Zach was 20 stone and I was 12 stone. And so there was a bit of a distance to go. And I got 6 weeks. Stephen gave me 6 weeks, at five meals a day and a trainer for twice a day doing CrossFit. I don't know if you've ever done CrossFit. It's insane. It's sort of military, like rope climbing and a lot of crying and screaming. And we did that twice a day with a lot of chicken and sushi. And I got to 13 and a half stone. So, you know, but a lot of it was, you know, it was in the face.
Similar for you, Nick? Similar regime?
Yeah, I ate a wedding cake a day. I mean, we trained for 2 weeks and, you know, they worked out like a few amazing routines for us in terms of the fights. And I'd never been in an actual ring before, and they set up this incredible ring in a really beautiful old 1930s.
Men's Club in it was incredible. London, yeah.
But just the ring itself is so vibrant and it moves and it talks, and just to kind of get a big man in my arms and throw him down to the ground was a real feeling
we
of did. Power.
We wrestled. We danced.
We wrestled. Yeah, we danced a lot.
Well, you two went toe to toe.
Oh yeah.
How was that?
I had to fling myself at you horizontal. And
just trying to catch him and then slam him down, but just being careful, because I think, you know, I was potentially had the next James Bond in my hand.
Shatterhand. We haven't talked about Shatterhand. Yeah. The news of the weekend that apparently the new film, Bond film, is going to be called Shatterhand.
Is it?
That's what they're saying. And he starts shooting on April the 6th. A couple of rewrites. Obviously
Shatterhand.
Done. I know, weird. So what did you learn about wrestling? The secrets that you can... I mean, there wouldn't be secrets if you can tell us about them, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
Behind the scenes, how does it work? What? How much can you tell us about how it really works?
Well, they're very health and safety conscious,
right. Yeah.
Which I love. They're all about protecting one another, even though it looks explosively violent and awful.
It really does.
There are little secrets that they show you to just gently lay someone down. You know what I mean? Not to actually hurt.
It never looks like.
Yeah. I know, but
there's a lot of cupping, like a lot of cupping rather than grabbing.
Yes,
you know, basic things like that.
Right. Okay.
It's very
quite gentle.
Chin to chest.
It is quite nice.
How much time do you spend with Dwayne the Rock Johnson himself? He's responsible for this film. He's behind this film.
He's partly responsible for it. Yeah. You know, he did what, like 3 days on a 6-week shoot.
No, but didn't he? didn't he see a documentary about the family in his hotel room when he was over here?
The story goes, yeah, he was here in London, I think, shooting Fast and Furious 19. And he saw this documentary, which is a brilliant documentary, on the family. And he thought, yeah, that would make a cracking film.
So he's behind it. That's all immense.
Yeah, I mean, he's involved in it, yeah.
But didn't he...
He's the power.
Didn't he produce it? Didn't he make it happen?
He did.
He did, along with Steven, along with Film 4, and along with a lot of other people. But he... He did a day on he did a couple of days on the film.
Just say that he was the boss and
right, he was in charge.
Then you can be Shatterhand.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Music and comedy have long been bedfellows, but few combine the two with the panache and hysterics of our next guest. Please welcome a man that is bettered only by his beautiful, talented, charming and charismatic partner, Greg Davies on Taskmaster. It's Alex Horn!
Yes, your husband! Yay! On the show. Hi, Alex!
Oh, no, you're on the
Did you think we were joking?
I thought he was on the phone!
Even better!
Nice to see you.
But yeah, what she meant was, hello, darling, I love you.
Hello, everyone.
You have seen him before.
Yeah!
That was like, you were frightened of him.
Yeah, that's not the normal reaction. That's not a healthy reaction, is it, for
it
a wife?
It is the jumper.
You don't like the jumper? You gave him the jumper.
I did buy you that jumper. Very bright.
So, Alex, the horn section, so for people who don't know, it has horns, and it's eponymous, because you are Alex Horn.
Yes.
With an E, mm-hmm. But it's musical, so it could have horns in it if you
want. It does have horns in it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's music and comedy, Chris. I think we're the first people ever to combine the two. I don't think anyone's done that yet. So there's five musicians and myself, and I'm not musical, but I'm in control of these talented people. So that's sort of the joke, that I'm the conductor with the baton, but I don't know what I'm doing.
So what goes on from start to finish with a horn section gig?
Well, we were in Swansea last night. I can talk you through that. They were funnier than us. This often happens in Liverpool and Wales, where the audience are slightly funnier than you. So they dominated it. But so there's a lot of audience interaction. We found a man called John who rides a bus and has his own male voice choir. So he was the feature of the show. It's quite a spontaneous show. There's jazz, there's music, there's hip-hop, there's Airbnb, Airbnb, pretty much all the genres. It's good fun, Chris.
That sounds hilarious.
Is it a good joke?
It's a brilliant joke.
Thank you.
If you don't get a guy who drives a bus...
We always get a bus driver.
But who has a Welsh male voice choir. Mm. If you don't get one of those, what else are you looking for?
There'll be someone. But there are hints of Taskmaster in the show, which is the telly show I do. So we do a task with audience members who seem to like that. There's some tender moments. There's some anger.
Where's the anger coming from? Surely that's orchestrated. Surely you're like one of the most tranquil individuals I've ever met.
Well, the band get increasingly infuriated by the way I treat them. I don't know the pianist's name. He's a temporary pianist. He's been in the band 7 years now.
Right.
So I've not learnt his name. So they have this residual... I think they're just cross with me, generally.
Is it simmering revolt?
It's more than simmering
Does
now.
It happen? Does
What's
it...
the one above simmering? It's sort of approaching boiling.
Mm,
yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah.
You know the incident with the keeper,
yeah.
With him not yeah. going off. It's happening like that now. I'm the manager and the trumpeter won't stop playing. When I tell him to stop, he just says, oh, no, I'm carrying on. I'm going to play my trumpet.
Are you actually in charge or do they just let you think you're in charge?
It's a bit of both. My tactic in my career is to surround myself with more talented people.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, fair enough.
Because Rachel's no longer, you know, she's no longer part of the Monday to Friday breakfast regime. Are you in charge then?
I am in charge, yeah. I give them...
I give them bad chocolate cereal
on Mondays to make Monday better, because otherwise Monday's bad. So they have Frosties on a Monday.
Yes. Which I completely disapprove of.
But she's not there. So yeah. Dad can do what he wants.
Tuesday
they have... Tuesday's
it's like a Craig David song, but different.
I do give them fruit on Tuesday. Actually, I give them fruit on Tuesday. Not Monday, sometimes not on Wednesday. Raisins on Wednesday.
On Monday, fruit juice lying on Tuesday. It's all lie on Wednesday.
I'm trying to introduce them to music at the moment. Prince. I'm playing them at the moment. Diamonds and Pearls. That album. This is the sort of stuff we get up to when you're not there.
Oh, okay.
Some of it's inappropriate.
You could always listen to the radio.
They do sing the Selco advert. Oh, we listen to a lot of Virgin.
We don't play ad breaks on the show.
Because we listen in the morning.
Selco.
It's where the trade goes. All the time on holiday, that's all our six-year-olds sang.
Yeah, we're in the Maldives and they're singing the Selco advert.
You know the Vonage ad? The Vonage ad, which bangs on about an entourage. If you have an entourage, you want to get in with a Vonage. I keep screaming at the radio, why don't they call it a Vonterage? Sure, it's got, who are these copywriters? Well, therefore it's a Vonterage, isn't it? It's not difficult, it's not a huge leap, is it, Alex?
No, I'm completely on your side in this argument.
Well, there you are.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Stephen Knight. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So we've sorted your next film during that last
Absolutely.
Record.
Absolutely. The Nike story sounds Nike incredible.
Steve Knight on Phil Knight.
Absolutely. No, I mean, just all the stuff about him, and I'm obviously a really different sort of brain.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't.
Do you think it's here? You can't have it because it's still in the middle. Do you think you might read it one day?
I think I might now.
It's so well written. So well, he read it himself. He's a beautiful writer. Yeah. Not unlike yourself, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, so Stephen, before we get on to Serenity, starring Anne Hathaway and only Matthew McConaughey, by the way, Academy Award winners, it's out tomorrow on Sky Cinema and across the country in movie theatres. Can we just talk about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
We can.
I had no idea. Do you know, for years and years and years, I was trying to write the sequel to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because it's the perfect game show. What was your involvement in it?
At the time, all the broadcasters were saying, no quiz shows. Quiz shows are dead. And then Millionaire happened, and it took off like a rocket. It was amazing.
The irony is, of course, that it did actually kill off all the quiz shows. There are quiz shows around now. Chase is doing pretty well, but nowhere near what happened with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because it was so good. Mm. And I was in TV formats at the time, and I was creating my own formats. And I, you know, holy grail as always. You know, and I talk about one of the most. Revealing, enlightening moments in my TV experience from being a researcher, writer, presenter, whatever it may have been, an actor from time to time, was the day that somebody showed me the original pitch document for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And it was four pieces of A4 stapled in the corner. And this was the document. It wasn't a copy. This was the one. And it was a four pieces of
A4,
because kids, all you need is a blank sheet of A4 to achieve greatness, okay? The best things in the world have been done on paper, putting pen to paper, from Shakespeare to what happened in ancient China, to what's happening now, to anything you can imagine. You think about the things that have been put down on paper and what have happened as a consequence. You know, as many bad things as good things, but all from pen touching paper. Absolutely. And here you have these four pages of A4. The first page simply said, "Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?" in brackets, a game show stripped over 10 nights on ITV. That was page one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Page two was, "Answer 15 questions correctly, win £1 million in uppercase.
Keep it simple, that's the thing.
Page three was the sequential amounts of money to getting to £1 million and the safety points, which was another stroke of genius. So you can bank this money and you can still gamble on the next question in the next set of four.
Yeah. Let's just see, the thing that was the game changer really was all of these things trying to keep people in the game. It finally clicked when we were allowing contestants to see the next question before they made the decision. That changed everything, because then they thought, I sort of know this, or I think I know someone who might know this. And that's when the thing really started to get tense.
So that's page three. Page four was the lifelines. And that was the pitch document. And it read so simply. And I thought, oh my God, that's so simple. But I know it's so complicated. I know it ended up simple, just like the pyramids did. You can draw a pyramid. Look, there's a pyramid. But you try and build one.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was the same thing, wasn't it? Genius moment. Anyway, hats off to that.
Thank you.
I just had to have that
chat
with you.
Absolutely. I've done
really... it's making the goosebumps on the back of my head. Right, so Serenity. Okay,
yes.
Now this is so interesting, because once again, you're trailblazing, you're pioneering, because we have a simul release, a simul cast, if you like. I don't know what the simul word for it is.
I think there isn't a word yet.
But maybe, what do you call it? It's a release, a simulise, if you like. It's out on Sky Cinema tomorrow, and it's also released in movie theatres tomorrow. It stars Matthew McConaughey. It stars Anne Hathaway. I'm halfway through it.
Oh, wow. You've got some surprises to come.
Well, there's already been some. So you take us through what happens in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fundamental story ostensibly it's the story of a fisherman who fishes for tuna, is obsessed with a particular fish that he keeps getting on the hook and keeps getting off. And then his ex-wife shows up and offers him a large sum of money to take her new husband out on the boat, get him drunk, and throw him over the side to the sharks. And that is the setup. And someone, you know, I write a lot of conventional stuff for studios and you know, the three-act structure and the arc of the character and all those rules about what you do with filmmaking. What I wanted to do was set up a conventional story with reference to other movies as well within it that are sort of hidden and or out in plain sight, and then destroy it and then pull the rug from under it, sort of like taking a car, smashing it into a tree and following the wheel that goes rolling down the road. So that was the... And whenever an idea comes that is quite experimental, a bit like Locke, is I then decide to direct it, because I think if it goes into the system, it would get changed. So I've done it as purely as I can.
Okay, I mean, a fascinating tale. So, I mean, you know, you get yourself proven track record. Everybody's going to be excited about your involvement. Everybody's really excited about the fact that it's this simul lease out with Sky Cinema and in the movie theatres on the same day. But then you need some dynamite in there. So you get Anne Hathaway and you get Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Are you responsible for to tempting them into your realm?
Well, it's a mysterious world when you write a script and release it into Hollywood. In other words, to the agents, and then you sort of wait. And normally you can work a long time. Sometimes you wait 10 years for a star who will get it financed to take the bait, if you like. There's a fishing analogy, but
are you a fisherman?
I am. Oh yeah, that's why the idea came when I was on a fishing boat in St. Lucia fishing for
shrimp. Where are you from?
Birmingham.
So you're the Hemingway of Birmingham.
Oh wow!
Very much. Because one man and the old man in the sea. It's all in there, isn't
but
it?
But it's all deliberate reference to those sort of things.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah. Okay. So who said yes first, Anne Hathaway or Matthew McConaughey?
Matthew. You know, somehow the thing gets out there and you get some feedback, and then suddenly you get a star who says they're interested. I went and met Matthew in LA and we talked, and he liked the idea and he liked the way it irreverently broke the rules, because that's the sort of stuff he likes. And then Anne very shortly afterwards was on board. This doesn't happen, not only not often, it doesn't happen ever, the doors fly open.
Right.
And so then what began as an experimental small film, because of the nature of the talent, became a much bigger deal.
Good for you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place on Virgin Radio.
From singing karaoke at his local pub in Essex to writing songs with Ed Sheeran and duetting with Snoop Dogg, our next guest has done it all and he's still doing it all. He's going to be doing it all for a long time to come. Currently sitting in the big red chair for ITV's The Voice. It is Mr. Pop himself, Mr. Ollie Mears. Good morning, Ollie.
Yes, it's good to be here.
So, what have you learned from series to series with The Voice? You know, if you were advising maybe a future coach, right? You say, look, you might not realise this in series one, but what you can do is this.
You know what? Being on other TV shows, Chris.
Right.
That a lot of the other TV shows that I've been on before, it was a bit produced, too overproduced.
Right.
Well, there was one thing I'd say about anyone coming on The Voice. I thought there'd be people telling me what to do, or up next we've got this person, blah, 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 or anything. You know, can you do this on camera? Can you sing at this point? The Voice has none of that. What I learned very quickly is that I spoke to Sir Tom. I was like, you know, what can I say or do? He's like, just do what you want. Like, you say what you want. I can move when I want. I can sing when I want. I can say whatever I want. And it's a great feeling. It's different. It's no restrictions. So for any coach going into the chair, I don't want to oversell it and make it sound amazing, because I don't want them to take my job, because I really love it. It's a really easy job for me, because I love music. I love helping people. And I get to sit next to Sir Tom every week. It's pretty amazing.
So how are the other judges faring? Are they all in a good fine order? Because obviously Tom...
Tom's great. I always feel for Jennifer, and Will's pretty much here all the time. I always feel for Jennifer Hudson, because she's just flew over from, she's been doing the Oscars this week, and she's obviously filming Cats at the moment, and obviously then she's doing the Aretha Franklin movie. And then she's on The Voice America as well. So she flies in and out all the time. So for her, it's crazy. But all of us, we just get on so well. We don't see each other much, but when we do, we've all got a whole day together today, so it's going to be good.
She stopped the show, didn't she, a couple of weeks ago? Because it went viral when she just...
The Impossible Dream.
Oh, what was that like?
Listen, I get so upset. I was just talking out there. I hate when people always go online and they always think that these things are, you've practiced that, you've rehearsed that. And the one thing about all of us on the show, we don't. We just get all these crowd heckling us. You can sing, 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 sing. And then Jennifer just went to Tenchi, the MD, said, could I sing Impossible Dream? And then she just did it. And I was just sat there going, oh my God. I mean,
I think they got about 10 million hits in a minute or something stupid.
Oh, it was incredible. And you know what? Their moments on the show are just got a gold dust. And that's what she brings to the show. She is phenomenally, you know, one of the best singers I've ever seen. And literally, she's standing right next to me. It's like, well, obviously not it's Rachel, but Jennifer is standing right next to me. She's incredible, Jennifer, yeah.
Can you knock out a tune, Rach?
No.
A bit of Impossible Dream? Come on.
Go on.
Go on.
Come on,
I have told you I was told to mime in my school choir.
Are you serious?
Because I had an expressive face but couldn't sing in tune.
What is your shower song? Do you have a song or a karaoke song?
Yesterday, I was freewheeling down the hill on my bicycle, and all I could think of was Enrique Iglesias, Be My Hero.
Good for you!
What would you sing at karaoke?
ABBA?
Nice. No, you wouldn't. ABBA's really hard to sing.
Is it?
They're really, it goes all over the place, ABBA. Dancing Queen, nice idea. You try and sing Dancing Queen all the way through and not be actually in ABBA. It's very difficult.
Oh, okay.
What about you? Come on. Obviously, we're going to have a karaoke.
I always go for a rapping song, like a Vanilla Ice, Ice Baby.
Tell us why.
Or Shaggy or something. I just can't, because I got thrown out. Well, I didn't get thrown out. I walked up to this bar once. It was a karaoke bar in, I was on a holiday, and I walked up and the guy said, sorry, mate, you're not allowed in. And I was like, and he put his arm across me. I said, what are you doing that for? He's like, we don't accept your kind in here. I said, what do you mean you're kind? He goes, well, you can sing. We're not allowing singers in. If you're going to come to karaoke, you can't sing. I was like, but I'm not going to sing my own song. I just want to have a laugh and have a drink with my mates.
Was he being serious?
100%. He would not let me in. It actually ended up escalating into something worse. I actually ended up nearly having a fight with this guy, and he was in the papers, weirdly enough. The Sun had this CCTV footage of me kicking off with this guy.
He wouldn't let me in. Well, I'm sort of not. I mean, I don't condone violence in any way, shape or form, but not being allowed in a karaoke bar because you're Ollie Murs and you can sing. That is outrageous.
I just wanted to go and have a laugh anyway. But I always do. I always try and do something funny or something to entertain people, because if I hate going up there thinking I've got a Sim Young song, you know what I mean?
But that's what everybody wants you to do.
Nah, I couldn't do it. And I wouldn't want to murder anyone else's song. So I'll just do something fun.
Fitness-wise.
Yes, mate.
What are you up to?
Fitness?
Yeah.
Always doing something. Right. Always doing
What's
something.
What's the last thing you did?
On Saturday, I've got in this sort of habit. I quite like it though, because I love doing sports. Me and my, I've got a couple of trainers, but Danny from VIP in Essex, is not like a VIP, like it's just the branded company that he works for, but he's his own company. And he's become really good friends of mine, and we said we'd just start doing some racket sports. So the other week we did squash, and on Saturday we decided to go and do badminton.
Right.
And it was really good fun. I just randomly turned up to this, we didn't book it, we randomly turned up to this sports centre, and I said, Danny, have you booked it? He went, no. I went, well, you can't just turn up on a Saturday morning to a sports centre and just expect to get a badminton call. He goes, but I'm with you. It'd be fine. I'm like, but look at the state of me. So we rocked up and we managed to get a court in the end, which was decent. So we had a bit of badminton. So that's what I've been doing recently. What about you? Have you been doing any fitness?
Yeah, no, we did. Well, we're getting ready for the London Marathon. So what are you getting ready for, Fass?
I've got a few hundred milers that I'm doing this year. But I tell you what, badminton.
Just a few.
A couple.
Just a few.
Badminton's tiring, isn't it?
It's also really aggressive.
Well, it is. But you feel like you're hitting it really hard, but you're not. It just goes. You're like, I'm really hitting this hard.
I know.
But you end up just doing, like, we call them in football doggies. You're just sprinting from there and back, there and back, there and back, there and back. And then in the end, you think, God, that really is tiring. I did the Great North Run last year.
And
I did the half marathon, right?
With Paul. Paul chaperoned you round, didn't he?
Yes, Paul did.
Because he took me round once.
Absolute legend he is. But anyway, killed me. My knees have not been the same since.
Well, did you train for it?
Yeah, of course I did. I did a whole year of training.
Well, how did it hurt your knees then?
Because running on the road, I've got bad knees anyway. I've got no ACL in my left leg.
Again, that's careless of you not to have an ACL.
I know, it's my own fault.
Have you got insoles?
No, I didn't need them. Right, I couldn't walk for about 2 weeks.
Well, what we discovered this week is that Wim Hof, this Dutch legend of breathing and mm-hmm. yoga, and this guy can regulate his own body temperature to survive in an ice bath for over 2 hours. He keeps setting the new world record for staying in an ice bath, and he beats his last record by a minute. It's 2 and a bit hours at the moment, but he can do four.
Whoa. Hang on a minute. How long?
4 hours.
4 hours in an ice bath.
Yeah, and he regulates his own body temperature, and he teaches other people how to do this. However, via this, part of the process is you start by having a cold shower.
You know what? I have seen this because one of my friends, I think I saw on Instagram, went to see him and they did these little classes and he had to go and sit in a river with him with like in a circle holding hands.
That's something else. But
no. And they had to sit in cold water and it's all about doing cold showers. That's how you start it. Yes. I get this. Yeah.
So we've all started this week. So what you do
have
is...
Have you really?
Yeah, so you have your shower, your normal shower,
yeah.
And then you turn it, you count yourself down 3 to 1, and you turn it to zero temperature and then you wait because it takes there's a lag for it to get cold. And then when you think it's at its coldest, you've already folded your arms. When you think it's at its coldest,
I'm intrigued by this.
When you think it's at its coldest, you then try and stay under it for 15 seconds and you build up to 2 minutes and you graduate it however you feel most comfortable.
Well, I was doing that when I was doing, when I was training for my half marathon. Every time I finished a 3 or 4 mile run or a 6 mile run, I always go straight into a cold shower for as long as it was, 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
But the thing is, we have a shower wired up now. Do you want to go and have a go?
You're winding me
up. No,
I'm
not at all.
I'm no way am I doing it now.
Come on, why not?
I can't do it. I've got to go to this morning with Phil and Holly.
Yeah, and his hair is all done.
Well, you'll be freshly laundered for them.
I can't. I, if you'd have told me, I would have done it. I would have come in here with I'd have just gone straight in. But I can't now.
No, I know.
That'd have been fun, though.
No, but it is ready to go. So Aussie Nick's willing to do it. Maybe, why don't you sing an Ollie Murs song to Ollie Murs in the shower before he goes on Phil and Holly? Yeah.
Wow, he's doing it.
Do you want to do? Do you want to go and chaperone Aussie Nick while he does it for us?
Yeah,
and he'll sing a bit of.
Watch him in the shower.
No, just officiate.
Do you want to go and watch Aussie naked, Aussie singing Nick, your song?
Come in, Ollie Murs, by the executive shower on the 14th floor. Hello, Ollie.
Hello. What is going on, everyone? I'm currently in a toilet. Well, in a shower stroke toilet with Aussie. A very not very hairy man, likes to wear his boxers in the shower.
Well, that's fine. We're pulling, okay with that.
Pulling very strange faces. He's never done this before, by the way.
Okay.
He's currently, as you can hear,
I'm showering.
He's having a lovely. It's a very strange moment for me to be watching another man have a shower.
Don't make out you've not done this before. And now, can you video this and put it on your Instagram thing, please, Ollie, if you don't mind?
We're going to do that now.
Okay, so what? I think the format of this, Ollie, is the shower already running? Is Nick having a shower now?
Yeah. Okay. Ollie is currently in the shower. It's nice and warm, as you said.
Yeah.
And he's when you give me the go-ahead, he's going to flip it to cold, and that is when we are going to start... to see how long he can last in a cold shower.
All right, which is very good for his health up to a certain point, and we'll let you. Are you a health and safety trained? Have you been on your first aid course?
Have we signed this off? It wasn't my fault, guys. It wasn't me.
Right. Okay. So when you're ready, Ollie, you give the 3-2-1 countdown to him turning the shower to absolute zero, and then we'll start the count. So off you go.
Right. Okay. So Ollie, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, are you ready?
We're ready.
Okay, in 3, 2, 1, flip it to cold.
Okay.
Go on, that's it, right there. Here we go.
We need to start the count.
That's us.
Stay under it.
Okay, and especially for Aussie Nick and his brand new friend Ollie Murs, Brian Ferry. Let's stick together, guys. Come on, then, you two. Come on. Come in.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. I'm not quite over it. Aussie, bless him. How are you, sir?
Nick, how do you feel?
Invigorated.
Invincible and invigorated.
Invigorated. Oh, all of it. All of it. Excuse my
pal. So how long did he last, Ollie?
Do you want to know the? Do I get a drum roll? Do I get any
I
sort?
I can give
of,
you a drum roll. Hang on a second.
Can you give me a
we
drum
can do
roll?
All that. Hang
what
on
was
a
the,
second.
What was the numbers? What were the figures?
I was 45. You were 52. With your tactical 52.
Teams. I went 117.
I went 130.
You
went
30. Yeah.
I hadn't heard his reaction.
Hang on a second. Here we go. Go on, off you go.
Oh, okay, so Chris Evans, what did you say?
170.
You said 170.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I can reveal that Aussie did it in 42 seconds.
42 seconds. That's pretty impressive, Ozzy.
I'm still shivering. God, that was good.
But how did you feel?
I feel invigorated. This is it. Let's do this. Let's do today.
Let's do the whole show
let's
again.
Let's do it again.
And you take the morning off. It's okay.
Let's all do it and see what we all get.
Yeah.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
So if you've just tuned in, Kate Burley, she's been at Sky News for 100 and what is it? How many
108
years?
108 years.
108 years. Okay. Many, many years. Uh-huh. She started Sky up with five other people around it in Rupert Murdoch's flat back in 1988 and 37,000 employees later, they're still going. Although Mr. Murdoch is no longer part of the scenario.
No, he is not. We were bought out by Comcast, which is NBC and others, in October of last year.
And has that changed anything so far?
Not as far as Sky News is concerned. And we've actually put an editorial board in place to make sure that we are completely independent and neutral. So right. There, if the lawyers are listening.
Okay, and you're not backward at coming forward about what you've had done work-wise as well.
Yeah, I've had a facelift.
You've had you had a bottom facelift, what do they call it?
No, a lower facelift.
Sorry, lower, I don't even know how it works. Oh, because of course.
Although my bottom could do with it.
Because you can have a bottom facelift, can't you?
Apparently.
Or a bottom lift.
Yeah, I've got a very big bottom. My grandfather used to say it was like a letting board for pigeons.
Well, where was he from?
Wigan.
Okay, of course he was, because you're from Wigan. Well, not of course he was, but from Wigan. The best colloquial phrase I heard this week was if a Yorkshire man wanted to pour scorn on somebody who'd sort of done him over, he would say, "I hope his rabbit dies and he can't sell the hutch." Anyway. That says so much, doesn't it? Don't you think so?
I'm using that. But he'll be from Lancashire when I tell that story.
Let's go to a children's book now. Mums and dads.
Love that century.
Okay, how would you like to talk about Mr. Dog and the Rabbit habit?
Yeah.
All right, one straight talking journalist now celebrating 30 years with Sky. That's Kay Burley,
that's
which is
me.
The one you sitting next to. A guy who's climbed Mount Everest, swum with crocodiles and rode across the Atlantic, but this morning he's made his way up to the 14th floor of the News Tower to talk about Mr. Dog and the Rabbit Habit, his first book for kids. It is Ben Vogel. Good morning,
Ben.
Good morning.
Mr. Dog and the Rabbit Habit, how did this come about?
I've written 10 books, love writing. I spend so much time in kind of planes and boats and cars travelling around the world for various jobs that I do. So I've got a lot of time thinking, and I think I'd always wanted to write a children's book. As a child, I loved Dr. Seuss. I loved the lyricism of his writing. And it wasn't until I became a dad and had children, started reading them endless stories, that I thought, okay, I think I can do this now, because I knew that they would be my greatest critics, that I would be able to hand them that manuscript, which quite frankly was the most terrifying experience of my life, to hand them this beloved
book.
And
you've been in some pretty terrifying experiences.
I know, but there's nothing quite like... my daughter, oh my gosh, I mean, she's terrifying. She keeps me on my toes.
Is she a future Kay Burley?
Oh my gosh.
Because there are future politicians not yet born that need grilling in the future.
Yes,
there are.
I don't know what it is about my daughter. I mean, she's amazing, but she definitely keeps me on my toes. So I think having my kids was the moment when I thought, actually, maybe this is the time. And what I wanted to do is bring in my passions in life. I love dogs, grown up with dogs all my life. And I spent lots of time in the countryside, and I thought I'd marry them together and do a new series of doggy adventures.
All right, so this is Mr. Dog and the Rabbit Habit. I got somebody to review this book last night.
Okay.
My 10-year-old son.
Oh, okay, that's quite nerve-wracking.
Okay, so here is what Noah Nicholas
Martin... Oh, Noah, be kind, please.
Noah Nicholas Martin Evans thought of this whilst he was in bed last night, and he just finished it in one sitting.
Hi, it's Thursday night. I've just finished Mr. Dog and the Rabbit Habit. I think it's a bit young for me, but I still love it. It's really exciting. My favourite characters are Mr. Dog and Socks. I think they're great because Mr. Dog is the hero and Socks is just really funny. At the beginning, it's really sad and it's really heartbreaking. Then it gets happier, but then it goes sad again. And I won't tell you how it ends. because it's secret and you have to read it yourself. I give it a solid 9 out of 10, if not a 9.5. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. That cost me a tenner. Wow. That cost me a tenner.
Noah. Thank you, Noah.
You owe me £10.
I really do.
Actually, make it 20. Our next guest does have a proper connection with Ben. I'm not sure whether she has one with Kay or not yet. So who is our next guest? One of Britain's most loved nursing dramas is drawing to an end for another season. Here we go. Another one bites the dust. We've watched our favourite popular nuns and nurses for 7 years now across 2 decades in BBC One's Call the Midwife, delivering news of the finale this Sunday, the season finale. It is Helen George. Good morning, Hells Bells.
Hello, good morning.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Okay, good to see you.
Home.
I know. And, well, we saw you, didn't we, just before we left
there.
You left,
yeah, the week you left.
You were doing the Christmas special and all this kind of stuff. And it's so funny because we often talk to you at the beginning of Midwife, Call the Midwife series, and it's usually with the Christmas special, but we've never talked to you at the end of one.
At the end? It's almost over, yeah. Not forever, though. We're doing another series.
No, but this just gets me in the mood for next Christmas.
Well, exactly. It's almost Christmas already.
Straight away.
Let's start shopping, yeah.
So this series has featured heavily on the 60s. 60s, you know, what an epoch-making decade. Mm, I mean, you know, post-World War II, you know, there were it was rainbow time instead of Third Reich time, the pop explosion, Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Pill, rich fodder for Call the Midwife.
Exactly, and you see it changing in Poplar, because Poplar was always sort of 10 years behind the rest of London. It wasn't Soho, you know, it wasn't cool and swinging. But it suddenly starts, you know, the bomb debris has been cleared and we've got these amazing big town, these big flat apartment blocks coming up, and everyone's got the modern fridges and the modern ovens, and, you know, everything just changes and the colours are so much more vibrant, and we're in, there's a mini skirt. I get my legs out in this series as well, which is
and there are mopeds.
There are mopeds.
Was it a right laugh?
That was so much fun. There were just all these lads on mopeds with, you know, the proper, like, Paul Weller do. And all the girls were just like, whew, this is a wonderful day.
Was it like being in the Call the Midwife version of Austin Powers?
It really was. It really was. I think I was wearing PVC boots as well.
Oh, right. So, Helen, so pressure's on the Christmas special and pressure's on the season finale, which is this Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what do you want to tell us? How can you whet our appetite more than perhaps it already is?
Well,
if that's possible.
The last episode was quite a big one in terms of dramatic storyline. We have the wonderful Annie Reid coming in, who is the grandma to one of our characters, Valerie, Nurse Valerie. And it turns out she has been the local abortionist, and a lot of the our patients have either been very poorly from her abortions that have been carried out or passed away. So we've got the continuum of that, but I'm not going to tell you what happens because that's a big old storyline. But we also have a wonderful dance, which is a 60s dance at our community hall.
Oh, hang on a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
So we did a foxtrot.
You have dancing previous, of course.
I have, because I did Strictly.
Yes.
So this was the first time that I'd done any ballroom since I did Strictly. So from 4 years ago. And I was petrified.
Were they all looking to you?
Well, yeah, a little bit. And I couldn't even remember how to do a foxtrot. I mean, it was dreadful. We had lessons by from this lady
who used to be... What the foxtrot's that she's doing, they were saying.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was awful. But I think I just whizzed past screen, so it's fine. So hopefully I won't...
Does it end with the dance number? Yeah, oh, you could, can
does,
you say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah, it does. It's really beautiful.
What
moment,
a laugh.
Actually.
Ben Vogel's here. Helen George is here. Kate Burley's here. The Coral are here with us. So let's talk mountains. What's that one you climbed up? What's the famous one?
Everest.
That's the one. That's the one. Okay, and you've written a book about it.
I did. I wrote a book called Up. Yep, Sunday Times bestseller, in fact. But it's much more than just a mountain book. It was the story of me as a very shy little boy going from a complete failure because I failed all my exams, and how I eventually ended up on the highest point on earth.
Where's the drive come from?
I think it's from all that failure. I can't reiterate enough. I took my driving test 7 times. Everything in my childhood was failure. The way the education system is loaded to exams nearly failed me, and that's where I got the drive, Chris, I think, because I had to try and prove to myself and other people that I could succeed at something in life.
I was exactly the same. Exactly the same. I never passed any of my exams. My father was an academic and always felt like a failure because of it. But people saying no to me and people failing me made me think, well, I'm not going
to
accept that.
Well, it starts to define you. You start to think that that defines you as a person, and it strips you of... All of us have such creativity and such potential, but if we conform to those expectations, then we're failed at an early age.
It's like saying, it's like taking a crocodile and an elephant and a monkey and saying, we're going to judge you on how well you can climb that tree. Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody is the monkey who can climb the tree. And, you know,
very good.
I like that analogy.
Some of us are crocodiles.
And the elephant just pushes the tree over.
Yeah.
Some of us
that was me. Cheers.
And the giraffe is saying, well, I'll give anyone a lift.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.